Well, that was a fun chat with George Knapp. Up next, of course, Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some incredible stories that she has uncovered and investigated, and we'll get right into them when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, back with us. Linda, of course, normally is on the last Thursday of every month, but with Christmas right around the corner, we moved her up. She'll get back to her regular schedule in January. She's an award-winning producer and investigative reporter, and she's got a series of great stories for us. And what a week for UFOs, Linda, huh?
Well, George, since we talked just a few weeks ago on Coast, we've had what I consider to be one of these historic breakthrough moments on last Saturday, December 16th, and I'm not sure that everybody yet understands the full meaning that when the Department of Defense gives to the New York Times the ability to put up infrared video of UFOs doing what the information that goes with those videos says, that these are unidentified aerial objects that are defying, are incomprehensible to Earth's understanding of physics. That is extraordinary. And I think there's a lot more to come. And since that, just in this last week, I have had some phone calls and emails from even more whistleblowers. And I'm going to begin tonight with one. It was before the breakthrough announcement, but I think it's in keeping with what I consider to be a new atmosphere. Things, the old lies and policies of denial are finally beginning to crack. And in this open, this first half hour, I want to start like thinking back 55 years ago on January 26, 1962, the United States attempted its first effort to launch a Ranger 3 spacecraft toward the moon with the goal to study radar reflectivity of the lunar surface. Ranger 3 was also expected to transmit pictures of the moon in the last 10 minutes before deliberately smashing onto the lunar ground, an impact that would have been studied with a seismometer that would have been dropped before the impact. But 2 days after launch, on January 28, 1962, NASA announced that, quote, a series of malfunctions, principally with the spacecraft's guidance system, set Ranger 3 hurtling past the moon at such and much higher speeds than planned, close quote. So that was the official reason why the January 1962 Ranger 3 mission failed. But tonight, I'm going to share other information from a retired NASA JPL flight controller. This is supposed to be the truth about what really happened. Sorry. Beginning in October 2017, I received a series of emails from a source I will call Amy about important matters related to policies of denial concerning UFOs and solar system research that has affected people working for NASA JPL. Amy told me that in the summer of 1990, when she was 19 years old, she was able to talk with a retired NASA JPL flight controller three times over a few weeks. She was shocked by some of what he told her, and she even made diary entries that she kept to this day about what he said. Here now from Denver, Colorado, is Amy, now 46 years old.
The summer of 1990, I was with a group of friends at a store, like a gas station where they had snacks, and they actually had a little sit-down area. And I would often meet with them there, you know, just discuss things in the news. And I just happened to bring a copy of An Alien Harvest and was showing my friends that.
Which is my book.
Yes, and they're really finding it fascinating, and we were just talking about different items in it. And I started showing them the papers from Bill Cooper that were published in the book and reading some of them to them. And what happened was the clerk, the cashier of that store, came over and he said, "You better be careful talking about these top secret things. You don't know who's listening." And it's like, oh, of came, we just kind of laughed it off. And after my friends had left, I went up to him and said, that's kind of interesting you would say that. How do you know about these things? And he says, well, back in the 1960s, I was a JPL flight controller. And he says, it's really sad what they've done to conceal various things from the public. And that's when he proceeded to tell me about what happened to him when he was a flight controller for the Ranger 3 spacecraft. And that spacecraft launched January 26, 1962, from Cape Canaveral, Florida, on an Atlas Agena B rocket. And it was about 30-some hours into the mission when they were doing their mid-course correction. He was looking at the telemetry from the spacecraft and started to come out as a bunch of gibberish, patterns that didn't make sense. And his bosses basically told him, just ignore it, don't worry about it. And he did just that until the signal went silent. And then after it went silent, they knew that something was very wrong with the mission. And they freeze all their data like they normally do. And within a matter of hours, the CIA, FBI, in suits showed up and started grilling them alone and in groups and asking them every possible third-degree question. It would almost seem normal for the loss of a $20 million spacecraft.
Where was this that the FBI and the CIA showed up?
This was at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.
So the CIA and the FBI show up in suits and ties, and they come to where? Who are the type of people in the room where they go, and what happens?
Well, the flight controllers themselves and everybody that was working all the back rooms of that mission, everybody who had any involvement with that mission at JPL were brought in various combinations, sometimes with bosses, sometimes in groups, sometimes individually, and they were grilling them about each and every conceivable aspect of that mission and what went wrong.
And what did the JPL flight controller that is telling you this in Lafayette, Colorado in the summer of 1990, what is it that he said they learned happened when Ranger 3 went silent?
He didn't learn this until later. He learned this under a higher clearance several years later, that what had happened is an unidentified spacecraft came in at twice Ranger's speed at that point, blew Ranger to smithereens, and then proceeded away at 10,000 miles per hour.
A UFO blew Ranger 3 to smithereens, coming at Ranger 3.
He said it approached at twice Ranger's speed.
What would that have been, do you think?
Oh, I would assume in the area of about 20,000 miles an hour.
Something came in at twice the speed of the Ranger 3 craft that was traveling at maybe 20,000 miles an hour between Earth and the moon. Twice that would be 40,000 miles an hour.
Right. I don't know the exact speed at the mid-course correction, and that course correction was designed to get the spacecraft on a deliberate collision course with the moon. And that is where everything was lost, where the data ceased transmission.
With the FBI and the CIA involved in this investigation, and his finding out later that it was some kind of a UFO coming at very rapid speed and blowing up Ranger 3 to smithereens and then taking off at 10,000 miles an hour, what did he tell you that the CIA FBI's policy was about announcing this to the world?
When they were being grilled and debriefed, one of the things they drilled into them very heavily was that this was a mid-course correction error and to say nothing more about it other than that it was a mid-course correction error.
And when he or anybody asked them why, what was their answer?
Well, that was the only thing that they were allowed to say. As time went on, NASA elaborated on it to cover for the fact that they were being sequestered at JPL. And that included a long song and dance story about the spacecraft getting a mixed signal and basically a mixed command that made an error in the trajectory and that it went behind the moon and they gathered some engineering data anyway.
All of that was a lie.
All that was a lie, the cover.
What did he tell you about why our government has a policy of lies and denials about UFOs?
Well, the general term he used was to avoid negative public reaction.
Avoid negative public reaction, which means they're making up stories and have been making up stories for 70 years to cover the interactions of an alien presence.
And further, he told me he learned later, around the same time he learned about the Ranger loss due to an unidentified spacecraft, he told me that they had altered data about inert gases, xenon, krypton, argon, so forth. He didn't name any specific gases or even any specific isotopes of those gases. He just said that those quantities were altered and they were found in significant quantities on both Venus and Mars. And I didn't really think about any of this story much until Dr. John Brandenburg gave his testimony about what he'd learned about the xenon isotope that actually was found in a certain pattern that would specifically link it to a nuclear explosion.
So what you're saying is that the JPL flight controller who had worked on Ranger 3 and I think later Ranger 7 up to Viking.
Yes.
That in 1990, that summer in Lafayette, Colorado, you were able to talk with him three times, and you learned from him that he knew for a fact that inert gases measured on Mars and on Venus were in the category of what would be the residue of nuclear explosions.
Precisely. But he did not state it in that way. He just stated that they had altered the inert gases.
And the they is?
Ostensibly, that would be whoever controlled NASA's data about these inert gases.
Who do you think controls NASA's data about gases on Venus and Mars?
Presumably, NASA does under normal circumstances, but if there's kind of problem like this, the deep state, who's ever in control of the UFO cover-up and the larger cover-up in general, would actually tell them and dictate to them what they can say and what kind of data they can put out.
A whistleblower told me that when NASA was brought into being, even though the public wasn't told this, that essentially it was set up so that the CIA would be the ones responsible for restricting whatever NASA was doing, that NASA was born under the thumb of the Central Intelligence Agency.
That makes sense from what he said about who came in and sequestered the entire team for 3 days.
What did he say about the sequestering of flight engineers, mechanical engineers, aerospace people for 3 days by agency people from the CIA?
The flight controllers at the time did not know why the spacecraft suddenly ceased transmission. They were obviously looking at more prosaic explanations, but they didn't know why. It was only after my friend, who is the controller here, actually knew from his advanced clearance exactly how that happened. They can move people around. They did. After this flight, they created what was called the Ranger Project Office. They shuffle a bunch of managers around. They can send them any direction they want.
In order to divide them so that people won't be talking to each other?
Precisely.
Yeah. And so that sequestering of JPL, NASA engineers and flight controllers in 1962, in fact, the Ranger 3 launch was January 26, 1962. So this is a sequestering that would have happened in January of 1962 at the mid-course correction date.
Yes, until the beginning of February.
Did the JPL flight controller who was talking to you in the summer of 1990 say that they learned anything about UFO alien presences on Mars and Venus at that time where they found that the amount of inert gases on Mars and Venus were fudged deliberately by the handlers of NASA?
He He did say they were fudged deliberately. He did not say why. Again, that phrase came up to avoid negative public reaction.
Super story, Linda.
Well, I tell you, this is really important in terms of the insights. It means that for 70 years, as we know, going back to Harry Truman, that there have been, they were afraid of all of this, and that not only was it to avoid negative public reaction, the documents back then say it was to keep the public and the media away from anything about UFOs and ETs at all costs. That phrase is repeated. And after my recorded phone interview with Amy, I played back excerpts with nuclear physicist John Brandenburg. I wanted his feedback. And in the next Earth Files report, upcoming in the next half hour, John says, quote, "It's very much confirmatory of what I understand. You must remember that NASA, especially JPL, which does a lot of classified defense work, both together are viewed as part of the defense intelligence establishment. The idea that they are a civilian space agency is just a fable that they've put out to the public. They're actually part of the Department of Defense for the intelligence community, and they're expected to follow orders. Almost all of the astronauts are either active military or ex-military, and they just consider it part of their job to avoid any negative public reaction," close quote, which means that we're in a country that somehow took a 90-degree or 180-degree turn at the end of World War II to lie, deliberately lie, about the alien presence and technology that was defying all understanding of physics. And now it's 70 years later, and we have institution after institution, agency after agency, that has a policy of lying to cover up, to avoid negative public, and you could add media reaction, when in fact, if they had been telling the truth in the last 70 years, we might be living on a completely different and more positive planet.
Do you feel vindicated, Linda, with this recent disclosure of what the government's been working on?
Yeah. I've had friends over the years who I think we've had arguments about this, and they've been calling me in droves and saying, well, when it looks like what you have been reporting about has been solid all of these decades, and they want to know more, and I hope that our audience, the Earth Files audience, all of it, I hope everybody realizes this is the real deal, and we're at the scratching surface of an iceberg, and we need to know a whole lot more. And in this next half hour, you're going to hear John Brandenburg having listened to Amy and his reaction.
John Brandenburg, of course, just a great investigator and researcher.
Well, he's a plasma
physicist. Yeah, there's just a lot of credibility with him. And yeah, are you all ready for Christmas?
No. Lots and lots of exciting work. But yes, I will be there, my brother and friends. We're
great.
All going to go to see Star Wars, 10 of us together.
Ooh.
The day after Christmas.
We won't tell you the ending.
Oh, I can't wait.
Super. Linda's website, by the way, is earthfiles.com. You can send her an email by going to earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And, of course, she's been with us as long as George Knapp has. And that's a long, long time. So we're going to come back with her and more of her stories. And then remember, the last hour, we call it Conversations with Linda, where we take your calls. Well, as I mentioned to George Knapp, we're going to be having a live stage show in Las Vegas next year. But the two that are coming up, oh boy, in March 10th, Salt Lake City, and then April 21st, Scottsdale, Arizona. Full information at coasttocoastam.com and the carousel reel. You'll just click that and it'll take you to the links. But very quickly, the online tickets available for Salt Lake City at artsaltlake.org. And then for Scottsdale, it is scottsdalearts.org. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe from EarthFiles.com. And Linda continues with more of her fascinating stories. Go ahead, Linda.
Thank you, George. In 2015, a newly published book by plasma physicist John Brandenburg, Ph.D., was entitled Death on Mars, The Discovery of a Planetary Nuclear Massacre. 65-year-old John Brandenburg received his Ph.D. in theoretical plasma physics at the University of California Davis Extension Campus at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in Livermore, California, in 1981. His Ph.D. thesis was about magnetic confinement of plasmas for controlled nuclear fusion. For his book, he analyzed United States 1976 Viking spacecraft data about the Martian atmosphere. John Brandenburg dug deeply into original Viking 1976 atmospheric data that showed the amount of xenon-129 on Mars was 2.5 times more abundant than the xenon-129 to xenon-132 ratio here on Earth. And we humans know that on this planet, dozens of atomic and hydrogen bombs were exploded since July 1945, when America first tested an atomic bomb at the Trinity site in New Mexico's White Sands Proving Ground and Missile Range. And then we dropped two atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki that ended World War II. More atomic and hydrogen bomb tests continued into the 1960s. So John Brandenburg says, the only explanation for that 2.5 times more abundant xenon-129 observable in the Martian atmosphere and soil would be two large hydrogen bombs exploded over the Red Planet's northern hemisphere and those places that we have come to call Cydonia Mensa and Galaxias Chaos. Cydonia is where that large carved face on Mars is, and it is not a trick of light and shadow, which NASA in the beginning tried to convince the public it was a trick of light and shadow. Now, when could something as dramatic as hydrogen bombs, when could this have happened? John is not certain, but he thinks it might have been several million years ago. He has even presented his Mars hydrogen bombs hypothesis and data when he was asked to speak at the September 2016, just a little bit more than a year ago. It was a space conference organized by the American Institute of Astronautics and Aeronautics in Long Beach, California, where NASA and aerospace managers and former astronauts also spoke. I called John up a couple of weeks ago to play excerpts of my interview with Amy about the retired JPL NASA flight engineer who told her that JPL NASA fudged the atmospheric data for both Mars and Venus in order to cover up the xenon-129 amount that implies nuclear bomb explosions. Here now from Madison, Wisconsin, is plasma physicist John Brandenburg.
Talk to me about the reactions that you have to this testimony.
Well, it's very much confirmatory of what I understand. You must remember that NASA, especially JPL, which does a lot of classified defense work, they are viewed as part of the defense intelligence establishment. The idea that they're a civilian space agency is just a fable that they put out to the public.
Right.
They're actually part of the Department of Defense or the intel community. And they're expected to follow orders. Almost all of the astronauts are either active military or ex-military. And they just consider it part of their job to avoiding negative public reaction. That's in the RAND report that is really part of the founding DNA of NASA. This was discovered by Don Ecker. Mm-hmm. And they expected to find a dead civilization on Mars.
Why?
Well, they expected to find evidence of extraterrestrial visitation on the planet, they said.
When did they say that?
That was about in 1960, the RAND report. And I discuss it in my book, Death on Mars. And so what they say in there, that if we find something, evidence of extraterrestrial civilization or visitation, we're just going to cover it up because it will lead to a negative public reaction. You got to remember, a lot of these people, especially in the early 60s, got their training in World War II, in the Korean War, where public morale is considered very much part of the war effort. So they guard public morale as much as they do physical parts of the country.
But John, to cover up something impactful as knowing that there has been life on Mars and the implication that reaffirms your own work, that there were some kind of thermonuclear explosions on Mars, and then this new addition of Venus. Did you know about that?
Well, Venus is a curious case because Xenon 129 data from Mars was immediately published, which, you know, shows this nuclear signature to those who are in the know. However, Venus, they kept saying that the xenon data was garbled. So if this is correct, then it also means they found the same nuclear weapon signature on Venus. You can't find xenon 129 data from Venus, despite the fact that we landed a spacecraft there. It's funny, they released the other inert gases, but not xenon. They said the xenon data was garbled.
Another lie, another cover.
Well, yes. I'm afraid so. To them, covering up stuff is just reflex, especially if it has any defense implications, which, in a sense, Mars and apparently Venus also became part of the UFO cover-up.
Your hypothesis on Mars, two hydrogen bombs over the Northern Hemisphere, over the Cydonia area.
Also the Utopia area.
Yes. Can you frame that hypothesis of yours now with this new data from the JPL retired flight controller, that Venus also had the same kind of signature? How would you then speculate about what was happening in this solar system?
If that was true, it's as if somebody just came through the solar system and wiped out every life-bearing planet that they saw. Now, there was an enormous mass extinction. Earth almost turned into Mars about a quarter of a billion years ago in what's called the Great Permian Extinction. There are isotopic anomalies that are associated with that. In my book, I urged people, if they were aware of isotopic anomalies, that they should publish them.
And your implication is that the timeline might have been a quarter billion years ago when we had the Permian extinction, and it may have been the same timeline.
Yes, it may have been the same sort of event. Somebody may have dropped a very large nuclear weapon on Earth at the time in an attempt to kill all life on Earth. Because, I mean, 90% of the life in the ocean died.
Yeah. And that if this was at the same time that Venus and Mars had these hypothesized hydrogen bombs exploded on them, has anybody suggested who the players would have been that wanted to take out life in this solar system?
No. The reports I have heard is that there are many species out there, as you would expect. There are many intelligent species out there, and some of them, they could walk by you on the street and you would not think they were from another planet. They look absolutely human. And in fact, they apparently are our relatives. We're part them. You know, that's the thing in the Bible in Genesis where somebody came down here and intermarried with us.
You were going to tell me something more about Mars.
NASA released the data on the Mars Xenon 129. Which was quite remarkable. So that was released in like 1976. And it's possible they did not recognize initially its significance when they released it. Then, it's my understanding, then they sent a probe into the Venusian atmosphere, and that's where the supposed xenon assay failed. Even though they got krypton and the lighter gases, they apparently said, oh, we can't get any good data on xenon distributions. So So any xenon 129 anomaly on Venus is apparently they couldn't detect it, or it's classified.
What is your speculation?
I'm speculating that they kept it quiet because the Russians landed several times on Venus and they never reported anything on xenon gas, even though it would have been very easy for them to do so. The Russians, believe it or not, it's one of the few things the Americans and the Russians agree on, is that you keep this stuff quiet. It's in neither country's interest to talk about possibly hostile aliens out there.
But John, keeping this information secret with policies of denial does not change the truth that there apparently have been thermonuclear explosions on Mars and Venus and perhaps the Earth.
Well, I can be certain that they occurred on Mars. There's evidence because of the timing of the Great Permian Extinction. By the way, there's no explanation for the Permian Extinction. It is a complete mystery. The whole ocean died, and that would indicate a large amount of radioactivity probably got deposited in the ocean and killed off all the plankton. All the other mass extinctions on Earth, they were much less severe, and the oceans basically helped repopulate the Earth, whereas in the Permian extinction, the oceans died. So it's a deep, deep mystery, and it's about the same time that this event may have occurred on Mars. Venus, I'm going to keep an open mind on it. The Russian landings on Venus didn't occur till the 70s, and the American landings on Venus didn't occur till the 70s. It was the late 70s where the Pioneer probe landed on Venus, and that's where they gave the story that, surprisingly, they couldn't get any xenon data, even though they got data on other inert gases. I was trying to figure out what is normal xenon for a planet that's the same as Earth, which is xenon 129 and xenon 132 almost in complete balance. Everywhere in the solar system, that's true, even on Jupiter. But I always wondered about Venus because they just didn't have any data, they said. And that surprised me because everything else on that mission went perfectly. And the Russians themselves landed on Venus successfully. So you would have thought they would have measured things like that, but they were real quiet about that. We don't get any xenon data from the Russians, from Venus.
And so this retired JPL flight controller talking with this teenager in summer of 1990 does provide a puzzle piece that fits in and reinforces your own hypothesis.
Yes, yes, I would say so. And I have heard from another scientist closely involved in Mars research that there is indeed a Mars cover-up. I've gone to a lot of Mars science meetings, and some of them have befriended me, people who are in the inner circle of NASA as far as Mars, and one of them did confirm to me that there was a Mars cover-up going on.
Did you talk with her about details?
No, she said something really interesting, though. She said, you ought to read the works of William K. Hartman. William K. Hartman is not just a Mars guy, he's a solar system guy. He is probably one of the grand old men of planetary exploration. So this person told me, you ought to read his books. You want to know what's really going on about Mars. So I looked up his books, and he's got one book called Mars Underground, which has a secret government base on Mars because they found a dead civilization on Mars.
Wow.
Mars Underground was written in 1997. And then the next book he wrote was another book called Cities of Gold. It was written in 2002. And here's the interesting thing. William K. Hartman not only is the grand old man of planetary exploration, Moon, Mars, Venus, Jupiter, everything. He also was part of the Condon study.
No kidding.
Yes, he was. The person who told me said he'll never say anything about it. But they did tell me it was sort of knowledge among the inner circle that the two novels were about reality on Mars.
Well, Brandenburg knows his stuff, Linda.
Well, yes, but just think about this last statement that Professor Hartman worked on the Condon study.
Yeah.
And that was Edward Condon, a physicist at the University of Colorado, who the U.S. Air Force funded to do a UFO study between 1966 and 68.
And he put down UFOs, basically.
And yeah, the committee produced a so-called final report that said the study of UFOs was unlikely to yield major scientific discoveries, and they kind of closed it and dismissed it, sort of like Project Blue Book. But they were both phony. Both were phony studies, specifically at the request of the intel, counter-intel people, because they wanted to get the public and the media off of their backs, both the military side and the intel side. But there were other scientists, such as the very respected physicist James McDonald, and he wrote and stated that he concluded that the Condon report was, quote, inadequate, close quote, and biased in its examination of only a tiny fraction of the most baffling UFO reports. And his implication was this was on purpose. This was a puff piece to try to get the public and the media to stop paying attention to UFOs. Well, it may be that, as John said, Professor Hartman won't do interviews about whatever true facts that Professor Hartman knows about Mars and its underground, but at least all of us can go out and get this book, Mars Underground. I'm ordering it. And one of the things that this ties into in the minute we have left is that in 1988, I got a call from a man who was working at White Sands Missile Range, and he had a good friend in the Naval Research Lab there. And he called me out of the blue, said he was aware of my work, and he wanted to come visit. He did come. He said, I want you to know that I have talked with a physicist who says he's been to Mars 6 times since the since 1978, that there is a I guess it would be military base underground in a lava tube on Mars, and that it has been there since some point in the 1970s. And he said they are trying to prepare for the fact that they feel strongly that humanity has to put itself on another planet. And now we know that Elon Musk is determined, is saying that he's moving up his launch date to 2024 to go to Mars. And if the other story is true, Elon Musk won't be building a new base. He will be joining a new base.
That's right. We'll be back with more with Linda in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.